Are human beings individuals, or are we created for community? Hello, I'm Alden Thompson. Welcome to Probe. This quarter, we're developing a new series on religion in relationships. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College, and Aline Bauer, a visiting instructor in theology who is with us for the first time. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Now, let's get started with the question here of the importance of community. I'd like to go clear back to the beginning of the Bible. What clues are there that would suggest an answer to our question, whether we are individuals or community or both? How would we address the creation accounts here that might help us answer that particular question?
Well, you kind of gave that away already, Alden, that the creation account is, in fact, one that teaches, I think, that we are individuals. In fact, I'm fascinated by that aspect of creation, of the creation story, that indicates that what God created had a distinct sense of being that is independent from God. And I don't mean doesn't need God, but it's God and creation are differentiated in that story.
And he actually gives remarkable responsibilities to these creatures that he makes.
And not only does God give being, but he gives the ability to become.
Mm-hmm.
And so what God created is dynamic, and so, you know, individuality is a very, very important element of that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, very quickly, you run into community. The great and famous text, it is not good for man to be alone. And along comes a companion.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's in Genesis 2. Is there any clue of community in Genesis 1?
Well, would it include community, the very fact that God created us for himself, that he wants to have community with us?
Uh-huh. And my guess is, even the way the Bible describes that, let us make mm-hmm. man in our image,
yeah,
as if this is going to be something fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the intriguing thing is that it says that he made, and the Hebrew word there for man, Adam, is the same one. It's generic. We can't do that in English quite as well. Male and female, he created them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So right from the beginning, you have
the
combination.
The genetic human being in two versions.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Now, when we go to Genesis 2, where there's a lot more interaction, God actually gets involved. He gets his hands muddy and shapes things here so that there's a much closer bond between creator and the created. But then, what do you make of the way that God tempted Adam to sense his need for community? I think he must have had a sense of humor when he did that.
Now, what are you referring to?
Well, has Adam go by and watch all the animals in pairs, and Adam gets through and scratches his head and says,
something's wrong here.
Something's
wrong.
Something's missing.
I am the only one who's alone.
And it was sort of like God wanted him to realize that in a way that would just be unique for him.
That's right. And then, of course, you have this famous text, the one that Dave's already referred to at the end. It's not good for man to be alone. And he leaves his father and his mother and cleaves unto his wife, and two shall become one flesh. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go on to a New Testament passage and something that's rather intriguing. When I have my students talk about God's expectations of us, I discover that we can almost always agree at what happens on the horizontal level. In other words, how we should treat one another. Now, I'm saying, in theory, we agree. It may not be easy in practice.
I'm glad you clarified that.
But what I mean is that when we go to church or to God, that's where the trouble, that's where the anger, that's where the cynicism begins to come in. And what intrigues me is we go to the New Testament, you have a two-command version. You shall love God with all your heart. The second one, love your neighbor as yourself. But Matthew 7:12 gives an even shorter version in which there's no mention of God at all. Do to others as you would have them do to you. This is the law and the prophets. Now, would it be safe or would it be too dangerous to say that the way we express our religion is primarily in the way we treat one another? Is that being too frisky, Dave?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that that verse presumes the existence and the presence of God.
Yes.
So the fact that God is not mentioned there in particular is not of great consequence in my mind. But the other point, the subsequent point, I think is very interesting also in view of the great parable of the sheep and the goats, where, mm-hmm. where you know, that's a hard parable to read, because not only is the are the parameters of decision very narrow, and they are specifically related to how we treated people, particularly the down and outers, but the other challenging aspect, that is that the people who are doing the treating are surprised.
On both sides.
On both sides, that's right, yeah. On both mm-hmm. sides.
We'll have a chance to come back to that parable several times during our discussions this quarter, because it is terribly important as far as relationships are concerned.
Yeah, so I you know, to speak to you, the question you raised, I think that the way we treat each other is definitely a reflection of whatever connection or absence of connection we have with God. Mm-hmm. And it is a great challenge as a human being to learn to see others, even those who we find, well, distasteful is not really the right word, but the people who we don't like, mm-hmm. to learn to see them as God sees them is really to pass, to cross a great hurdle in human existence.
Well, and I think John points that out too very clearly, where he says, "Where you know, this love's the basic thing," mm-hmm. and Jesus says too, "That's how you'll know you're my disciples, yeah. by how you love other people."
Yeah, and if the love is absent, mm-hmm. the verdict isn't too pretty.
Yeah. You know, but I like what you said, Dave, that even though God isn't mentioned, it's obviously there, because we can't love or treat others in the way that is that we're called to if mm-hmm. we don't have a connection with God.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that our colleague Paul Dibdahl has called our attention is the remarkable variety of way how God deals with these relationships, especially in the Gospel of Luke. For example, you have one of the lawyers asking, "What must I do to be saved?" And Jesus says, "Well, what do the commandments say?" And he gives a good answer, but then comes back and says, "Well, who's my neighbor?" And Jesus points to the story of the Good Samaritan of all people. Yeah. And so the answer to "What must I do to be saved?" is the story of the Good Samaritan, which is a remarkable juxtaposition.
You know, I have to tell you that in the first pastoral responsibility I had, I lived right next to a freeway. And I learned very quickly that there are a lot of people who travel by there who are in need, or seem to be in need, or represent themselves to be in need. And quite frankly, it used to aggravate me, because those people always seem to come at an inopportune moment, and they always want money. And I can't tell you how many times I had to deal with situations like this. And I had friends who said, "Well, you ought to drive out on the freeway and see if, in fact, their car is broken down," or this and that. And after dealing with this for a while, I finally got a hold of myself, and I said, "You know, I don't want one day to stand before my Savior and say, for the sake of my own suspicions or for the sake of a measly $5, I mistreated or I ignored somebody in need." And so I would never go and check on them. I would take them at face value. And I would go, if they wanted food, I'd buy them food. If I wanted gas, I'd go buy them gas. It was a lesson I was glad I learned early on in life, that even the unlovely and the people who may be preying on you are still worthy of care. Yeah. But it does take, I like what you said, Aline, it takes the divine dimension in order to be able to do that, because as human beings, we don't do that easily.
We can't do it. Mm-mm.
Yeah, that's right. Now let's shift to another major document or another major piece of Scripture, and that's the Ten Commandments. It is fairly obvious, if you look at the Ten Commandments, the first four deal more directly with our relationship to God, and the last six deal with our relationship to human beings. But there are some crossovers. And I would like for us to simply take a look at the first four and maybe think about how that might give us a clue as to what is important for human beings. Even though they deal directly with our relationship to God, what do the first four tell us about relationships? Any clues?
Well, one idea that comes to my mind quite readily is the primacy. Well, I'll put it another way. It's the need to remove self out of the center of life. I don't know if you are thinking of that, Alden, but it seems to me that to make God primary is to move self away from a primary position, which actually makes us far more amenable to human relationships or good ones.
And I think it's also interesting when you look at thou shalt not have any graven images.
Yeah.
In other words, we don't want anything human to get in the way of our picture of God.
Yeah.
So that helps us to keep from making God into our own image, I think.
Yeah.
And then, you should not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Why would people misuse God's name? Probably for personal benefit.
Or out of anger.
Or out of anger.
Yeah. Yeah. Which may be personal benefit, too.
Yeah. A little more punch. Yeah. So, any way you look at it, if you are a believer, you bring God into the equation, you bring your fellow human beings into the equation, and that's terribly important in terms of our understanding of the world.
But don't you think, Alden, too, that one of the important things of the Ten Commandments is that as God is mentioned first in those first four, our focus on that, it really is that which sets our tone for how we treat others.
Mm-hmm.
And though we can get messages like we've just mentioned that show us the importance of that, that as our relationship with God improves, then our relationship on the horizontal also does.
And I found it a great help, too. If God is my father, then everyone else are my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And it's much more difficult to be nasty when you remember that.
Yes.
Now let's go to a New Testament. Famous chapter in the New Testament, the love chapter. Ten Commandments is mostly commands. But 1 Corinthians deals with love. And can love be commanded? How do you get love? God commands us to love, but you can't really respond to a command.
Well, there's got to be something here that we can gather from this, and it reminds me of a class I recently had where we had just finished studying 1 Corinthians, and the student said to me, he said, I don't identify with lofty pictures and cliched imagery. I need to know how it can influence my life. You know, how can it make a practical difference in how I live my life today? And if there's any wording that is beautiful, it is certainly 1 Corinthians 13. But I think we need to ask, how then does that change the way I live? How do I take those beautiful words and turn them into something that is in action?
Now, is it safe to say that the attributes of love described there are more the act of the will rather than a product of the emotion? Is that a safe conclusion?
Well, I think so. I think so. And I like the old saying that your decisions are your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that applies to love. You know, if you decide to act in a kind and in a loving way, that is in fact the action that grows out of it.
And it's interesting that it also lists positives and negatives. Love does this and love doesn't do this. So you have both sides of the coin there.
Yeah.
And once you start doing decent things for people, it's often the case that you begin to actually think more positively about them as well. So it starts with an act. You may not have warm emotional feelings, but it certainly begins to move in that direction. Well, thank you, Aline and Dave, for helping us out this week. Next week, we are going to turn to a specific command, honor your father and your mother. That will be our primary topic, and Aline and Dave will be back with us. My thanks to Jeremy Erland, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.